This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast, speaking today with one of the most brilliant physicians, surgeons in the country, Dr. Stephen Hochschuler. Stephen's had this magnificent career. He's founder of one of the largest Texas Back Institute, one of the most respected back and spine and orthopedic practices in the country. Also the founder and has worked with several different hospitals, has had a great professional life, just a magnificent leader. Stephen, can you take a moment and introduce yourself? And we're just going to talk to today on your perspective on coronavirus and what's going on. Stephen, can you introduce yourself and ask your best thoughts on what's going on?
Sure. I'm Steve Hochschuler. I'm a spine surgeon. I've been at it for almost 45 years, and we've kind of been in the forefront of everything developed in spine, from the MRI to artificial discs, to image guidance, and you name it. My thinking on the coronavirus, and it's all secondary, but I've spoken to a lot of people on the East Coast, West Coast, one of the heads of the U.S. Task Force on Bioterrorism, so I'm relatively informed. I think it's worse than I originally believed, but not as bad as the hysteria has kind of churned it up. I do think that what's going on at this point is they're trying to contain the spread as much as they can in our country, i.e. the U.S., so that they're prepared along the way with more testing kits, with more respirators, with hospital beds, and with the movement of hospitals to outpatient surgery centers. There really are a lot of hospitals that have been closed, which you might find will start up again quickly in order to deal with this problem.
And what's your sense? You've spoken about most of us sort of, there sort of was not great information coming out of China. I don't know if that's an intelligence failure on our part or if that's from China, there wasn't clarity of it. But as we've gotten clear about what's going on with Europe and this and how bad it could be, what is sort of your, do you have any sense of prognosis? Will this be seasonal like the flu? Will it start to die down like apparently it's starting to do in China? Or is this going to be a long-term debacle? And you've had a long career. You've seen different crises in our country of different types. What's your sense of how this sort of plays out?
I must first say this is purely conjectural, and I've guessed wrong on other things in my life and might well be this case as well. What do I think? Well, I grew up during the time of polio, and that truly was a serious problem. And you were indirectly quarantined, that you were told to stay away from crowds, similar to now, stay away from swimming pools. You got huge injections, I mean, multiple cc's of gamma globulin in each butt cheek. But they didn't really know what they were doing. They just wanted to prevent the spread. Well, today, public health and the whole idea of the CDC is much, much, much advanced. But we're again fighting with a system that, or with a disease that we don't know much about. A lot of it's based on the fact now on global trade and the whole idea of supply chain coming from all over the world and the internet development and everything. Now we're just one big, huge society. So what's going to happen? We don't know. The problem with guessing on what is the mortality, for instance, they do think it's older people, but nevertheless, they can't really guess the mortality because we don't have a denominator. That is, we don't know how many people have caught the bug. And until you have a denominator, you can't figure out the numerator or how many deaths. They're basing whatever guesses they have primarily on China and now on Italy and those that they think have tapered off. And consequently, the statistics are moving target.
Right. And the most positive silver lining would be is if the China death numbers are right, and we have no idea if those really are or not, because we just don't really know, and the denominator numbers are much higher than expected just because there's not been the amount of testing to really know how many people have it. I mean, you know, in this country, when they say that 1,500 people have it, Well, we know that that is vastly understated just by common sense, just because we haven't tested so many people, so you know there's a ton more than that. But the hope is that the numerator is a real number, and the denominator is truly much higher, so that the real death rates will come down. And that's sort of the hope, uncertain, but the hope.
Agreed.
They talk about, you act and seem a lot younger than someone that would have had experience with the polio, you know, time. But tell us about how that was compared to this, and how nerve-wracking and crazy and scary it was. You know, here it sort of hits in pieces, because it's something that most of us, you know, and I'm not that much younger than you, I'm closer to your age than a lot of others, haven't seen anything like this. We saw 9/11. You know, we sort of saw it. We saw the financial crisis in 2008, which is a very different thing. We've seen a little bit of the SARS and MERS and swine flu, but none of it seemed really that directly on point with here. How does this feel compared to the polio time? And when did that get cleared up? How did that get cleared up? Was that just the vaccine that they finally got, or what drove that?
Well, in all honesty, you know, it's hard to remember back that far, but I would say the following. First of all, everybody was nervous. Everybody was afraid. Parents were very scared for their children. You did get the gamma globulin, which who knew what that effect was, but I thought it would build up your resistance. One big difference was you didn't have the internet. You didn't have CNN. You did not have all the TV stations. I mean, it was really before all of the mass communications that we have today were available. And consequently, the fear or the panic or the hysteria could not spread outside your community. So I grew up in a small island off of Long Island. And all I can tell you is that we had 30,000 people in the winter. And in essence, you just spoke to the people you knew. You knew of a case or two in your community, but, you know, you tried to avoid it. But we today, information is instant. And that in itself is good in some ways and bad in some ways. So that we had no idea what was going to China. China was a big behemoth that we didn't deal with. We had no idea what was going on in Europe. A call to Europe then was transatlantic call that was very expensive. So we didn't know what we know today. So sometimes, like in this case, knowledge is good and bad.
Well, certainly the knowledge, and I feel it in my own mood. You look at the internet, one moment you're feeling better, one moment you're feeling worried. Every time you cough, you feel like you're dying. I mean, it's a very scary and anxiety-provoking time, and then it goes back and forth, and it's a really fascinating train. Figure out when the new normal will be and people sort of get adjusted to it.
I couldn't agree more. And also, you go into stores. I was in a big grocery store this morning trying to find some medicine with zinc, because personally I think it might help keeping your oropharynx full of some zinc. But be that as it may, there was none. So a lot of commodities like toilet paper, I mean, why in the world would people be out of toilet paper? But they are. And so there's a run on things, because when people panic, they go and stock up everything at home. And that would be great if they never left their home, but in practice.
But no one can really do that. We're too used to socializing. We can't do what they did in China, where they literally shut out down an area. You're not allowed to go out. It'll be very hard for our people to get there. In the social distancing, I mean, all of us, you're an expert physician, brilliant guy. With the social distancing, I think we're all starting to understand the theory about it. It's a word none of us knew till a week ago. You probably did, but the rest of us didn't. How much is that going to help sort of slow down this, you know, flatten the curve, as they say? Any sense of that?
Yeah, I first of all, I wondered about it, because sooner or later, we're all going to get exposed. So then it goes back to your other question. Will it be seasonal? We don't know. Some people say heat will drive it out. Others say, no, it might come back in the summer. You know, we don't know. So what's my guess? My guess is it'll be like everything else we've dealt with. It will be seasonal. It probably will have more of a mortality rate than the normal flu. I doubt it's going to be 10 times more, but that's a pure guess. Waiting and seeing, and especially for somebody like me who's a surgeon and you like to have some kind of response to almost anything, it's a very difficult thing for anybody to just wait and see.
Right. No, 100%. I mean, when you think about that, the 1% concept, if it's 1%, that's 10 times more deadly than the typical flu. But generally, you'd be in a spot where that would almost be the 1% number. It just depends on how many people get infected, how many people actually die. And those are all scary, scary numbers at the end of the day, just really frightening numbers. And so you hope that really that the denominator, in fact, is so much higher. And the reality is that the death rate is so much lower because the denominator is really so high, and we'll just hope for the best. Dr. Hochschuler, how do people learn more about you or Texas Back and so many of the amazing inventions and things that you've done?
Well, you know, we're still active in terms of both. We're always looking at downstream technology. So as a group, we look at a lot of things. I helped Harvard 40 years ago set up telemedicine. So I was 40 years too late. And today, telemedicine is a big answer even to this problem with the virus, because you can access your physician indirectly through, you know, telemedicine. So it's a great thing. In terms of what else we have been involved in, development of the artificial disc, I personally have helped most of the robots that are being used in spine. I'm now working with companies on augmented reality, which is very interesting and exciting. Regenerative medicine is another area which most of your listeners are well aware of, i.e. stem cells, regenerative processes. Where is it going to go? Again, we don't know, but my feeling is we're going to learn more and more and more about these things, and it's going to be very exciting. So I remain excited. By having been involved in research for all the years I've been in practice, nothing gets boring. People talk about burning out. I'm too old to burn out, and there's excitement throughout our organization.
Yeah, so that's fantastic. And the hope is, like all things, this will be a lot worse than how scared we all are. We know it's very bad. We know we got to take it all very seriously. And at the same time, it'll end up, hopefully, we'll end up persevering and getting through this with the minimal loss of total life and being able to move forward. But what a fascinating situation. And like you, we very much are hoping that these morbidity rates are much lower than originally projected and discussed. So, you know, Dr. Hochschuler, thank you again for joining us today. Always great to visit with you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.